going to be prepared with good policies when he comes in. So I support that. And obviously anything to get a fascist away from power is good. But that's why we haven't been working with these other cities as much as we were at the beginning. A lot of cities were looking to us for guidance with their protests. But we, you know, have been focusing on local stuff more so than stopping the Electoral College.
So how then do we prepare for a Donald Trump presidency if we can't solely rely upon institutional change and new policies? What sort of things can we do, for instance, like showing up in the street? Mm-hmm. You know, there are barriers to that. I think a lot of people that consider themselves progressives and liberals label demonstrations in the street as anarchistic. And I think there's a lot to unpack there. But can you talk about why it's important to have a critical mass showing up places and what else we can do that's not necessarily above ground?
Sure. So I think protesting is important for three things. One, community. It shows you the power of your people and your community when you come together. And looking back in history, it's very hard to find a time where people, massive amounts of people, came out to protest and they were wrong or looked disfavorably in history. It's always the counter protesters that were looked badly in history. So that's why I don't understand when we have Charlie Hales and other people in our city that are standing against the protesters. You're the Bull Connors of today, you know? Second, though, from just community is energy. You're gaining energy in being with community and being with like-minded people. You're getting ideas. But third and most importantly, it's leverage. They want you out the streets. I mean, by they, I mean the establishment. I mean, look what's going on in for DAPL right now. They want you out, so then you have more power to talk to them, because we don't have the money, we don't have the power, but we have the people, and that's all we have. So if we don't exercise the one thing that we have, then we're never going to have leverage to actually change the world for the better. But I think it's also important to realize that protesting is a privilege, right? Everything we do is a privilege. There's people that can't march, you know, that are disabled. There's people that have PTSD and don't even want to go outside. There's people that have kids they have to take care of. There's people that have to work because they're stuck in this capitalist society, right? So protesting itself is a privilege, but there's more that you can do. We want to transition in Portland's resistance to like being neighborhood, like association types things, where you have a resistance block in your neighborhood that take care of each other. So that means if you have a trans person of color, a Muslim or any marginalized community, a Latino, an immigrant in your community, that there are safe spaces for that person to be if they are threatened, if ICE comes to deport them, and all these situations that we fear that could be the worst of a Donald Trump presidency, setting up these safe networks locally to keep people safe, because first and foremost, that's what we need to do. But I do think that there is ways through the institutions that we have to have policies that change. And that's why I differ somewhat from some more radical ideologies, because I do think that policies do affect people. I've seen policies affect people. And when you have policies where someone is going to get deported, that affects people. So the Supreme Court affects people, you know, Roe v. Wade, that affects people. If that gets taken away, that affects people. So that's why I don't like this. I'm not going to engage in our political process because it's so corrupt. It is corrupt, but it's what we got.
So women and people of color, LGBTQIA plus community, and also refugees are very seldom represented in legislature. How do we go about finding more representation? I saw recently on Facebook that you were working with a Syrian refugee. I don't think a lot of people in Portland are aware that we have taken in Syrian refugees. We have Somali refugees. We have refugees from all over the world where there are crises happening and ongoing. Can you talk about your work with that child and sort of how you plan on sort of implementing the things you were talking about in communities, but also kind of ensuring at a policy level that different groups gain representation?
Sure. So what I do is on Wednesdays through Hands on Portland, I'm a lead coordinator of a project at a place where refugees are housed. And most of them are Somali, some from Burundi. and some from actually different places in Southeast Asia, but it was mostly always Somalis until this latest conflict, and now we see more and more Syrians or even people from other places as well in the Middle East. And what we do is on Wednesdays, I teach an art project to some, it's usually between 10 and 30 kids, and we have 10 to 15 volunteers. And we teach these kids art. They almost never do the actual project because they just want individual attention. They don't get that because they have a bunch of siblings and they have parents that have to deal with a bunch of real world stuff here. But it gives the parents an opportunity to get a break from the kids if they need, but also to go try and find work if they need it, or to go learn English. People think that, I remember when we were talking about letting refugees in, people said, well, we should take care of our veterans first. We have so many homeless veterans. You can be a refugee and be homeless. Like, it's not mutually exclusive. They still have to work. They still have to find a way to live. They're not living for free because they have refugee status. Like, and many of them don't even speak English yet. So, I think that's the kind of stuff that we need to do. I really think that the reason we got a Donald Trump is because our country has an extreme lack of empathy. We don't know these people. Today, even I saw a bunch of people writing about Syria or whatever, and it's like, if you cared this much, why don't you see what refugees we have here, right? If you cared this much, then why are you only posting on Facebook? Because these are real people and real faces. So when I see that image of that boy that was laying face down in the water, that was like extremely famous, I think it was from 2015, like that could be, his face was down. So that could be any of those kids that I work with. Like, it looks exactly the same from the back. And people don't think about the human impact of what's going on. So when Donald Trump says things like, we want to ban Muslims, he's talking about this little kid that's the best little kid I've ever met. He wants to ban that kid and would not shed a tear if he turns into the kid that was face down into the water. But I think the way that we involve these people more in our political process is that they have to know that this is their home, right? And we're not forcing you to assimilate to what we're doing. We're all humans, right? And you don't have to be like me to live here and have a say in what's going on, because America has potential to be great because of our diversity, not in spite of it.
Could you point any of our listeners in the direction of any communities or organizations that they could approach to interact with and help in some sort of productive way the refugees that are in our community?
Definitely. So actually the best way, if you go to Hands on Portland, just Google that and type in refugee kids or my name or anything like that, you'll be able to sign up. We're full a lot of the time, especially since I've been like doing this stuff, because more people have been coming. We only have 12 volunteers each time. But what I'm trying to do is set up, because there's different places, the way we don't have refugee camps, obviously. It kind of works in the same way as like Section 8 housing, to where they get a voucher basically to live in certain places, and only certain places qualify. So it ends up sort of being like a refugee camp, but it's great because there's a bunch of them around. And so if we could set up these art projects at different places, would be great. So that's what I want to eventually transition to. But if you reach out to me on Twitter, it's at Gregory McKelvey. I'll plug you in with all of this, and we do it every Wednesday. So 4:30 to 6:30.
Awesome. Going back to the city council, you have a lot of campaign and organizing experience. I think there's probably going to be a gulf between getting voter campaign finance reform taken care of and getting more people of color and other marginalized and suppressed groups represented there. What do you think that process is going to look like?
Money is not the only barrier whatsoever to being in elected office. A lot of it is the connections and the networking that is almost exclusively available to cisgendered white men. And, you know, sometimes I feel like they accidentally let me in the door. And now they're like, wait, how do we get this guy out of here? Because I run in these circles from working in politics for so long, so I know how these people think. It's so much more than just the politics to get more representation in politics. Like, you need to fix the society in general, housing, the economy, to where people have the ability to build these connections. Because right now, if I simply make it, if we just pass this and now your small donations are matched, you still might not be able to get small donations. You still might not be able to get to the support. You might not have been given the same privileges and opportunities to learn about these policies the same way that other people have, you know? The barriers to a college degree, the barriers to any form of successful education are the same economic barriers that bar people from becoming elected officials in the first place.
So can you talk about what's happening tomorrow and where you're meeting, what people can expect if they need to show up in any certain way?
Sure. So we are going to be at City Hall starting at 8. Most of us run on activist time, so it'll probably start at like 8:15. And we have a bunch of speakers, including Margot Black from Portland Tenants United, Chloe Udaly, just elected to City Council, myself, Cameron Witten, Juan Carlos, Francisco Lopez from Voz Hispania, Nico Serra from the Q Center, and from a former Bernie delegate, great friend of mine, part of the trans community and disabled community. So speaking to all these communities that have been barred from accessing the political system. So we're going to rally starting at like 8:15 tomorrow. Please show up at 8 in front of City Hall, and then we're going to move into City Hall. And it's going to be a great day for City Hall also because of the snow last week. They moved the fossil fuel infrastructure bans to this week. Portland's resistance had a whole bunch of demands that we put out in the beginning, one of which was being a sanctuary city, and we got that. Now we have the campaign finance reform, we're going to get that. We had fossil fuel infrastructure ban, we're going to get that. So we're knocking these off the list. We started with 22, now we're going to be at, 19, so.
Awesome. Well, one of the last things I want to go out on is last time there was a demonstration, or maybe it wasn't the last time, but recently, in recent memory, this year certainly, there was a gathering at City Hall and it turned into a scene of police brutality. And since then there have been, that very action where people were pushed downstairs and injured severely was demonstrating against a reform that gave police more impunity, yep. Essentially. Do you anticipate violence? Like, do you anticipate that type of response from the Portland Police Bureau?
I don't, but I wouldn't put it past them, you know? I didn't expect them to target me for arrest. I didn't expect that day. I was there telling people to leave, let's go. They're closing City Hall, let's leave. And I told the officers, we're leaving, and they said, move, and just moved on us anyway. So I don't know. That, I think, was done from Charlie Hales out of spite. And I think that he's possibly learned his lesson, and I don't think he wants to mess with me anymore.
Okay, we're all out of time, but thank you, Gregory, so much for
Anytime.
Taking time.
Love it.
I'm sure we'll have you on again soon. That was Gregory McKelvey from Portland Resistance. Find out more about their work on Facebook or on their website at pdxresistance.org. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Joe Lino, Al Khan, Miriam Widman, Tave Drake, Tom Flynn, and Laura Kilkner. The producer is Jenny Okoyama. Our engineer is Wesley Seiwei, the potentiometer. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Kanan Schlesinger.
Hey, I'm Lisa Loving. Surprise! Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Wednesday Talk Radio with host Paul Roland, just back from the resistance camp at Standing Rock. At 9, on Political Perspectives, in the U.S. Representative, it's the U.S. Representative for the Holiness, His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, Penpa Sering, visits the KBOO studio for an in-depth conversation. That's at 9 tomorrow. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, your daily news magazine. At 11 on The Dirtbag, growing citrus in Oregon, plus The Dirtbag Dictionary and Jim's Farms Follies. Thanks for your generous support. Thanks for your extra massive support during the membership drive. A reminder that all new and increased gifts to KBOO are matched one-to-one through the end of this year. Thanks to the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Go to KBOO.fm and click on Donate. Good night, Kanan.
Good night, Lisa.
Good night, Wesley.
Good night, Wesley.
Good night. The time is now 5:59 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Buyer and Seller, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from November 25th through December 17th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza in Portland. Buyer and Seller, the story of an underemployed Los Angeles actor who goes to work in Barbara Streisand's Malibu, California basement, allowing for delicious wit and commentary on the solitude of celebrity, the love-hate attraction between gay men and divas, and the melancholy that lurks beneath narcissism. Again, that's Buyer and Seller, November 25th through December 17th at the Sanctuary at Sandy Plaza, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information may be found at KBOO.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part